Welcome to Food Neighborhoods on Monocle 24. I am Markus Hippi. All cities have areas the locals love for their food and drink offerings, and in this series we get to know these places. Today we head to Largo do Machado in Rio de Janeiro. The neighborhood sits at the crosshairs of the city, on the edge of the city's north zone, on the way to the city center, and rounds out the city's south zone, serving up a wide variety of food that tells the story of Brazil's waves of immigration. To help our correspondent Gina Rossi to navigate her way through Largo do Machado streets, food guide Tom LeMessurier from the food tour's Eat Rio takes Gina around. Let's have a listen.
So today we're starting off in an area called Largo do Machado. It's actually on the kind of frontier between two neighborhoods, Catete, Flamengo, actually in another one, Laranjeiras as well. So we're kind of where those three neighborhoods meet. I think it's a really interesting part of the city. Rio's kind of broken up into three main zones. So you have the south zone, which is very touristic. It's very affluent. You have the north zone, which tends to get progressively poorer the further north you go. And you have the west zone, which is like kind of a newer construction type of an area, a lot of condos and business people. And where we're going to be today, Largo do Machado, that kind of an area, it's really where the south and the north start to meld, really. So it's not full of tourist haunts and sort of very commercial areas. And it still has enough kind of richness and diversity that you can walk between the different areas. So we're going to really see a really good snapshot of Rio kind of under the cover, away from all that real, the pizzazz of the commercial touristic sort of industry.
Um queijo, um carne e um kibe, por favor.
Any drinks you recommend from here?
They do some really good juices, actually. Do you like cupuaçu?
Oh, yeah.
E suco de cupuaçu, por favor.
The kind of background to this place is that this is one of the things that surprises a lot of people. Brazil has a really strong Middle Eastern community. Often, I mean, this started way back in the 1800s. A lot of merchants were coming over from places like Syria and Lebanon, and they've really naturalized themselves. So there's a lot of people who identify as Arab Brazilians, or maybe Brazilian Arabs, and yet they've become almost indistinguishable in the sense that they drink alcohol, they don't really sort of observe any of the religious restrictions. And that said, the food has really been kind of taken into the culinary culture here. So one of the most popular snacks you'll find on beaches, snack bars all over the place, is kibbe, which is very much a Middle Eastern snack. We're gonna get from this place here, rotisserie, Stereo e Libanesa, let's see if I can say that right. We're going to get Esfiha. Esfiha, just absolutely delicious. Anyway, these guys, as you can see from the lines up here, these guys do it better than anyone.
All right, so here's our first stop. You said this is the Esfiha de Queijo.
Yeah, so I actually had a guy from Lebanon on my tour last year, and he put me right on the pronunciation, although I'm probably going to murder it now. So there is genuinely a dish called Esfiha, and that's kind of become Brazilianified, I guess, over the years. So today, especially here in Rio, they say Esfiha. But it's a kind of triangle of pastry, a sort of flatbread, something like cheese or meat goes in the middle. This is kind of like the closed version. You do see sometimes, you see them like open, almost like a sort of little Middle Eastern pizza. But this is the closed version, so it's been folded over into a kind of triangle. So you have a kind of pastry parcel with something yummy in the middle. The cheese one here is really spectacular, and I love bringing people to this place because it's in a very, very unglamorous sort of shopping arcade. Looks like it was maybe built in the 50s or the 60s and has seen better days. And yet, hidden in amongst all these rather drab-looking shops, there's this real gem. And there's a reason why there's a big long line outside this place because, these things are really delicious. I'm not sure if someone from Lebanon or Syria would necessarily say these are exactly the way they'd be used to them, but I don't think there's anything wrong with that. These are really tasty.
Let's dig in.
Right.
Is that ricotta cheese?
Yeah, so I've spoken to them about this. I think they're using like that kind of mild Minas cheese. So the cheese from the state north of here, Minas Gerais, they say that's where all the best cheese and the best cachaça comes from in Brazil. It's almost, if you imagine a kind of, almost like a mozzarella, it has that kind of wet sort of texture that a mozzarella has. Creamy, very mild. I think it's nice on its own. The pastry is very soft and kind of gentle, but a few drops of this garlic sauce and a few drops of chili, if you're into the spice, I think works wonders on this one.
All right, so where are we now?
So we're in an Amazonian restaurant called Tacacá do Norte. This place specializes in really interesting Amazonian food. things that most people have never heard of, really strange ingredients, really delicious stuff. When I have guests who've kind of been everywhere and tried everything, this is the place I can take them where I know they're going to have some surprises. This is brewed up in the Amazon. It's a red ale, which has been flavored with, I believe this is a spice, which they call priprioca. It's a really interesting flavor, this one. Sort of somewhat like, somewhere between vanilla and cinnamon, shall we say, but I mean, quite subtle, so it's not like one of those sweet beers, which I'm not a massive fan of.
Okay, so here we have a few very traditional Amazonian foods that we just tried, and I'll let you take it away, Tom. What are we eating?
Okay, so we started with something called unha de caranguejo. So what this is, it's kind of, I guess it looks a bit like a croquette. There's sort of mince, like meat from a mud crab that is quite common up in the north of Brazil. It's kind of cooked with tomatoes and herbs and things, and then sort of surrounded in a kind of... I guess you call it like a masa, and breadcrumbs, deep fried with a big old crab claw sticking out the edge of it, which is rather delicious. We're having that with a kind of a real zingy, spicy sauce made with a very particular ingredient from the Amazon called tucupi, which is made from a highly poisonous form of yuca. The indigenous people found a way centuries ago of making this stuff edible, but it takes about 7 days. It's a really quite an amazing process, actually. So that's our first course, shall we say. We're going to follow that up with acai. So acai, if you frequent health food stores around the world, you may be aware of this. It's a berry, has a kind of similar flavor profile to maybe blueberries or something. Very high in antioxidants, which is why there are various people telling you it'll solve almost everything from aging to anti-cancer to anything else you can think of, pretty much. I don't know how true all of those claims are, but it tastes delicious. I think it's a really tasty treat. And we're washing that down with a couple of Amazonian beers. So these have been brewed up in Belém, which is the capital of Pará. That's Brazil's second largest state. We've got a red ale, which has been flavored with, I believe this is a sort of herb called priprioca, which has a kind of black peppery kind of flavor. And we also have a chocolate porter, which has been flavored with a really interesting fruit called cupuaçu. So yeah, really interesting stuff. Sort of ancient and modern. Certainly those beers are quite modern sort of innovation, but using very particular Amazonian ingredients.
How does Rio marry food from other parts of Brazil, not just other parts of Brazil, but as we already stopped by an Arabic food place, how does it marry and bring together food from other parts of the world?
Well, Brazil hasn't had a lot of recent waves of immigration, but over the years, certainly people have moved here from the northeast of the country and from the north, from the Amazonian region, and from places like the Middle East and Japan and so on. A lot of these dishes certainly get Brazilianified, you know, so certainly if you did come from the Middle East or China or Japan, you might find the Brazilian versions of those dishes quite different, really. I mean, I think that's probably true everywhere. But certainly when we run the food tours, what we try to do is to give people an introduction. You can pretty much get a broad introduction to food from all over the country right here in Brazil. And nicely, you can actually walk between those places. You're not going to find anything from India or Southeast Asia yet. We're hoping that's going to start coming soon. But certainly there's a good variety of food you can eat here, and you don't have to go anywhere near a barbecue restaurant.
Na verdade, pouquinho mais café. Agora vai. Obrigada. All right, so we're here on our third stop. We've now experienced immigration food to Brazil, kind of more a recent wave of immigration with the Arabic food that we tried a little bit earlier. Then we had the internal immigration, where we had Amazonian food that came from the north. Now we're here on our last stop. Can you explain what it is?
So we're in one of the oldest sort of restaurants and cafes in the city called Café Lamas. This was founded in 1874. And here you find all kinds of great examples of Brazil's colonial past. So really Portuguese food, Portuguese classics here. So things like what we have in front of us here with our coffees is the pastel de nata. This is probably Portugal's most loved sweets. This is like a sort of pastry cup filled with a sort of egg, vanilla, custard. Everywhere pretty much that the Portuguese went back in their days of the empire, they left these behind. So you can find a variation of this in Macau, in parts of India even, and certainly here in Brazil, this is one of the real favorites.
Here in Brazil, they seem to do a bit of a twist on the name. They usually go from pastel de nata to pastel de Belém. Do you know why that is?
So this is a little bit like people outside of France calling sparkling white wine champagne. As I understand it, there's really only one place in the world that you can get Pastel de Belém, and that is one particular place which sadly I have not yet visited in Portugal, where they are made by a particular set of nuns. As I understand it, everywhere else in the world, you must call it Pastel de Nata. So I'm sure if there was a Portuguese person here and I called it Pastel de Belém, they would immediately put me right. I think a lot of people, when they come to Rio, they have a lot of preconceptions. They're quite worried maybe about the security situation. Sometimes they actually have it like the other end of the scale, where they think everyone's dancing samba and drinking cocktails on the beach. And really what we're trying to do is give people a true vision of what the city is. I mean, there are some utterly charming things which you won't read about in the brochures, you won't see in the real touristy neighborhoods like Ipanema. You know, and also, of course, there are some bad aspects to it, which maybe not every Brazilian would want you to see. And we don't sugarcoat anything either. But, you know, what we do is we give people a real view of what the city's about. And actually, we sort of set them up in terms of moving around the city and getting the most out of their time here.
That was Tom LeMessurier guiding Monocle's Rio correspondent, Sheena Rossiter. And that was episode number 9 of Food Neighbourhoods. For more food and drink stories, tune in to The Menu every Friday at 1900 London time. I am Markus Hippi. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.